For a man who hadn't touched a chessboard in nearly four decades, Bagan played surprisingly well. Observing the match, Dayan compared the scene to combat. In the first game, Brzezinski recklessly attacked and lost his queen. Bagan was also an aggressive player, but more systematic and deliberate. Brzezinski adjusted his strategy and won the second game, but he fell behind in the third. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 270, The Chess Match. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is, I think, one of the most striking photographs in the history of Israel. Menachem Begin sitting opposite Zbigniew Brzezinski in Camp David, the two men playing chess with one another, or rather, against one another. Both Brzezinski and Begin, of course, came from Poland, but with vast differences. Brzezinski, a descendant of a prominent Polish diplomat, and Begin, the son of Polish Jews, and the leader of Beitar for all the chapters in Poland. As many books note, it was Begin's chief of staff, Yechiel Kadishai, who famously quipped something to the effect that Brzezinski and Begin were both from Poland, but they were Poles apart. From the perspective of history, the photograph, given the fact that Menachem Begin was where he was and had come from where he had come, is absolutely amazing. The photo is striking, of course, for another reason as well. It gives us chess as a metaphor for statecraft. And here the metaphor can be taken in several ways. Chess can be understood first and foremost as a game of the seeking of victory over one's opponent. But then there is another element of chess and to the symbolism it provides. In a famous episode in the history of Chabad Hasidism, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was visited at one gathering by Samuel Reshevsky, a brilliant chess player on the international scene who was also an Orthodox Jew and who refused to partake in matches on the Sabbath. In his talk at the gathering, the Rebbe, who himself famously had an affection for chess, chose the game as a spiritual symbol around which to center his speech. Here is a translation from Chabad.org of a passage from his remarks. The Rebbe said, quote, "The king is the most valuable piece on the chessboard. Protecting the king and attacking the pieces which threaten the king's dominion is the objective of the game and the goal of all the pieces at the king's disposal. The same thing is true with all of created reality. The king represents the king of the universe. When God created the world, he had an end goal in mind, that this God-denying reality be made into a place where his dominion is known. Just as all of the pieces in the chess game exist only to protect the king and further his goal, all components of creation only exist in order to fulfill this deepest desire of the king of kings." So the Rebbe said. The Rebbe was using chess as a metaphor for religion, not politics, but by extension we can utilize a version of this for statecraft. While some may see statecraft as a quest for glory or strength or some other goal for Begin, it was first and foremost about protecting a vision of the Jewish people grounded in a bond to tradition and the biblical book of the King of Kings. This meant that there were certain issues for Begin that were non-negotiable and others where the negotiation would be impacted by these non-negotiable premises. And all this meant, in turn, that the understanding of the diplomatic chess match at Camp David was very different from the perspective taken by others. Lawrence Wright, in his book on the Camp David Accords, describes a series of non-literal chess moves taken by Brzezinski before the summit. He writes, quote, "Begin's main fear was that Carter and Sadat were conspiring against him. He had reason to be concerned. Earlier in the year, Brzezinski came up with the idea of colluding with Sadat in order to put pressure on Begin. The scheme would involve Sadat putting forward an Egyptian plan for the West Bank and Gaza, which would be realistic enough to accommodate Israel's security needs, but would also include some points that the U.S. would find unacceptable. That would allow Carter to argue with both Begin and Sadat, whereupon he would produce a quote-unquote compromise plan that Sadat had already secretly agreed to in advance. Begin would be placed in a vise. Carter could squeeze him without appearing biased against the Israeli position, bringing to bear all of the power of his office and the acknowledged vulnerability of Israel's dependence on the United States. The Americans were counting on Sadat's theatrical abilities to carry it off. Vance," Wright continues, "was opposed to the idea, however, and Sadat was really too impulsive to be a trustworthy conspirator. But the American team continued to believe that there would have to be some kind of stratagem in place to pressure Begin if there was to be any hope of pulling off a meaningful peace agreement. If Begin refused to budge, the American goal was to arouse enough domestic pressure against him to bring down his government with the intention of producing a more flexible partner for peace, Ezer Weizmann being the most appealing candidate to replace him." End quote. All these assumptions by the American administration about what might prove effective in pressuring Begin explain the frustration that grew from the Carter team as Begin refused to be pressured. The mistakes made by the Carter team are ably documented by Gerald Steinberg and Zev Rabinowitz in their book on Begin and the Camp David Accords, in which they argue that Begin and Carter saw the negotiation, indeed the very act of negotiation in general, in fundamentally different ways. For the American negotiators, negotiation itself was a matter of psychology and of playing on the psychology of the other side. That is why Carter had a full psychological profile put together of Begin and Sadat before Camp David. For Begin, in contrast, his negotiation was driven by what Steinberg and Rabinowitz call ideology, what I would call inner faith and tradition. It's with all this in mind that we can ponder Wright's account of the literal chess match at Camp David, so memorably captured in the photograph. Wright describes it as follows, quote, "As the match started, Begin announced that this was the first time he had played chess since September 1940, when he was arrested by the Soviet police because of his Zionist activities. On that fateful day, he had been playing chess with his friend Dr. Israel Scheib. Eliza had calmly invited the detectives to join them for tea. They thanked her but said they were in a hurry, although they allowed Begin to polish his shoes. As he was leaving, he told Eliza, 'Don't forget to tell Scheib that I concede the last chess game to him.' He was leading anyway when they interrupted us. For a man who hadn't touched a chessboard in nearly four decades, Begin played surprisingly well. Observing the match, Dayan compared the scene to combat. In the first game, Brzezinski recklessly attacked and lost his queen. Begin was also an aggressive player, but more systematic and deliberate. Brzezinski adjusted his strategy and won the second game, but he fell behind in the third. By now, word had spread all over the camp about the match. At one point, Begin's wife appeared and seemed so pleased. 'Menachem just loves to play chess,' she exclaimed, confirming Brzezinski's growing suspicion. Hamilton Jordan sidled up to one of the Israelis in the audience. 'Do me a favor and make sure Begin wins,' he remarked. 'Otherwise, Zibig will be unbearable.' Begin did win, 3-1." End quote. Wright then further quotes a member of the Israeli team who thought that Brzezinski had allowed Begin to win on the assumption that this would make Begin more amenable to political compromise, with the result being very different. I do not know whether this is true or not, and am perfectly willing to believe that Begin fairly and evenly won the great chess match. But if Brzezinski really thought that he could coax Begin by impacting his psychology, this was another miscalculation, because again, the negotiation was not really a matter of psychology, first and foremost. The next day, the trip to Gettysburg took place, and that evening Carter presented his own version of a plan around which the Accords could be based. Begin grew even more upset when he read it, believing that it was too close to the demands made by Sadat for it to serve as a real source of moving forward. As Begin and Carter spoke about the plan late into the night, Begin insisted that the most problematic aspect of Carter's proposal was its using UN Resolution 242 to describe an obligation on Israel to withdraw from Judea and Samaria, with Carter saying in fury, according to Wright's book, "You will have to accept it," and Begin responding, "Mr. President, no threats, please." Thus, the impasse continued for some time after the great chess match. It is only by day 8 of the summit that Carter shifted gears and asked Azar Weizmann to see him. Here is Wright's account. Quote, "Weizmann responded to the president's summons and found Carter poring over a giant map of Sinai. The White House had requested a map of the peninsula that was 15 feet by 22 feet, the exact dimensions of the Camp David billiards room. Carter had spread it out over the floor and spent a considerable amount of time on his knees examining every wadi and oasis in the region. He told Weizmann that he had decided to break the American proposal into two parts. One was to be a grand bargain he hoped would resolve the Middle East conflict. The other would specifically deal with the Sinai settlements in order to achieve a separate peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. From the beginning, the Israelis had hoped to separate the two issues. The trick for Carter would be in linking them in a way that would be acceptable to Sadat." End quote. Thus, we have a chess move made by Carter that in a certain sense changed the whole negotiation, turning the negotiation into a chess match that Begin had been seeking the entire time. And here we get to another difference in understanding between Begin and Carter, highlighted by Steinberg and Rabinowitz. Carter, they reflect, approached foreign policy from the perspective of an American president, whose authority in foreign policy is immense, and he wrongly assumed that Begin could approach foreign policy in the same way. But Begin understood that he would need to navigate party politics at home as well. Or to take our chess metaphor a bit further, whereas Carter thought Camp David was only one chess match, it was actually more than one. In a certain sense, Begin at Camp David is akin to those chess players that walk around playing several games at once. Begin had to simultaneously negotiate with Sadat and Carter in Camp David while simultaneously preparing to negotiate the complexity of Israeli party politics, and especially the complexity of the newly powerful Israeli right, which had been brought to victory by Begin himself. And by focusing first and foremost on the Sinai, Begin would be able to engage in his most complex act of statecraft by engaging these two very different chessboards. Tomorrow we will see how this would unfold. Today we conclude with a passage from the Chabad.org article about the chess player Samuel Reshevsky and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The article tells us about another event long after the Rebbe's reflection about the spiritual symbolism of chess. Quote, "At the age of 70, Reshevsky was no longer among the elite winners at chess tournaments. When he asked the Rebbe whether he should retire, the Rebbe replied that he should not, telling him that playing chess while meticulously observing the mitzvot was his way of sanctifying God's name. Not long after that, Reshevsky defeated the world champion, Vasily Smyslov, in the Soviet Union. He received a standing ovation from the 1,000-member audience who were enchanted by his brilliance. A short while later, in the year 1984, Reshevsky was proclaimed the joint winner of a major chess tournament which took place in Iceland, a victory for which he had prepared by asking for the Rebbe's blessing." End quote. In Camp David, another chess match was taking place, in which one of the players was driven by faith, and a blessing was to come from this engagement as well. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.